I woke up so early, then I decided that that was a mistake and I should go back to bed. So now here we are.
Back in October, I got to chat with a really cool band, Little Hurricane. I knew their music, but didn't really have any personal ties to the band, so it was very lucky that one of the producers of this show, Rob, knew CeCe and Tone from way back and was able to put us in touch. They called in from their work studio near Lake Tahoe.
I'm going to try to start on my to-do list right away after this cup of coffee, because I've noticed if I wait too long, then I wait till half the day is over. So I'm going to try to get to it right away.
Good morning. This is Emily. Welcome back to My Caffeine Withdrawal. I love this week's episode. I had such a nice morning learning about CeCe and Tone. And we talk about how they formed their band, meeting on Craigslist. CeCe was actually a chef before starting Little Hurricane. And as they share how their journey as a band progresses, we get really into what their priorities are as musicians and how they've navigated both high times and low times and having a family. Be sure to stick around to the very end of this podcast because CeCe and Tone performed two songs. One is from the project they've been working on during this pandemic, which is turning nursery rhymes into rock songs to share with their kids. They are by far the coolest parents ever, and it's the best version of Ba Ba Black Sheep you've ever heard. But first, of course, Tone walked me through his typical morning of making coffee and making breakfast for the kids.
Some good coffee. I'm ready to start my day.
Go get your coffee.
I have to like boil the kettle. You'll be waiting.
Oh, you'll have to. Okay. Well, speaking of coffee, let's talk about like your coffee setup during quarantine and how you make your coffee. What do you do, pour over?
Oh yeah. No, I switched to pour over a while back once I realized that it tasted way better. She does not drink coffee.
Wah, wah, wah. Do you have like a morning drink or like, is it just like tea?
I don't.
Water.
I try and avoid caffeine. Okay. I love Coca-Cola.
That's
but,
not avoiding caffeine.
I try to avoid that as well. But if I were to drink coffee, I think I would never sleep. So unfortunately, I've just never caught the coffee bug.
Yeah.
But Tone drinks plenty of coffee for the both of us.
Nice.
Except for right now where it's cold in here. I wish I had one.
So yeah, like walk me through your coffee setup that you have. So you wake up
it's
in the
morning. It's real simple.
Okay.
Yeah. Get the kids up. We have two young kids, so now life is different with two kids where I have to get up at like 7 every morning instead of like the musician hours of 10 or whatever.
How old are they?
We have a 3-year-old and a 0.
Oh, wow.
A boy and a girl.
That's amazing.
It's fun, but yeah, sometimes I try to get a coffee somewhere in between making the breakfast and then hopefully it stays hot while I drink it.
Okay.
I think that's like a problem. It, you know, when you have kids, you're like, oh, I can finally drink my coffee. Wait, it's cold now.
Yeah. Especially pour over.
Right. I've been using like a insulated coffee mug sometimes just to prevent that from happening.
Yeah. There's a really good pour over from that brand Fellow. It's just a coffee company, but they have like basically a pour over, but it's like insulated. So it stays hotter longer, which is really nice. And then are you like particular about your coffee beans?
I'm kind of just, you know, whatever. When we're in San Diego for that Stage It concert, we stopped at a little market in La Jolla and I picked up like a La Jolla Simple Beans company or whatever.
Okay,
so
cool.
I've been doing that. It's like a Rwanda bean.
Okay. Are you like particular about grinding it or anything like that?
Is it? I don't think I'm like the geekiest geek of coffee, but I do enjoy it. And I used to work at a studio where they had an espresso machine and I'd make, you know, the cappuccinos and stuff, but I still just prefer black pour over.
Oh, nice. Now, you guys know Rob from Chicago, is that right?
CeCe's from Chicago.
Yeah, okay. He was shooting one of our shows in Chicago and he had written us to try and take some photos and then he had texted me and I was like, oh, 847 phone number, like that's weird.
Yeah.
Because that was where I grew up. So then we kind of connected over that, and we've just stayed friends over the years. So it's been cool watching him on his podcast journey, and, you know, we see him at shows every so often, and it's fun.
And so then how did you guys meet, and how did you start making music together? Because I don't know the story, really.
So we're going on a decade of being together and being a band.
Okay.
We met in San Diego.
We met in San Diego, and I had moved to San Diego in 2005, and I was cooking at the time, and I went to culinary school, and I cooked all over Chicago and all over California.
What was, like, your best dish?
I don't know if I had a best dish. I loved, like, Italian food, but I also worked for a lot of French chefs, and inevitably, at every kitchen I worked at, I would be the only girl, and I didn't want to be the pastry chef, but the pastry chef would suck. And I'd be like, you can't serve this food. So inevitably, I would always end up going back to pastry, even though I really fought that because I felt like, oh, because I'm a girl, you think I want to bake cakes. Like, I want to cook the steaks and I want to do all the tough stuff and get burned. But I also really cared about plate presentation. And I feel that men sometimes have a harder time presenting a beautiful dessert versus, like, a nice steak. So I finally quit cooking for good and decided that I just needed to, like, totally change my life because I did not want to end up cooking like some of the chefs that I work for who are like in their late 60s and still working, you know, 70, 80 hours a week and not getting paid really that much. And so I ended up shifting to bartending, and I had always dreamed of playing the drums. Every chef hated me because I would like take all my little pots and pans and turn them upside down and pretend like I'm playing the drums.
Oh, wow.
And I had this dream of like being on stage and playing the drums. And it occurred to me like, I'm getting older. Like, I'm not going to be able to like do this in 10 more years. Which I still am, but so I posted an ad on Craigslist looking for a guitar player because I thought that that would be a good place to start, and that felt less intimidating to me.
To like jam with someone.
Like in a garage. Like I was not expecting to like play on stage. And Tone responded and talked about his background in audio engineering, and I did not believe him at all. I thought he was lying for sure. So I was like, okay, yeah, come in. I'm working at this bar. Come in and we'll meet. And he wasn't lying. And he was telling the truth, and he turned out to be my neighbor. We live three blocks away on the same street.
Yeah, so I moved to San Diego. I grew up in Northern California, in Santa Cruz, and then moved to San Diego. I had like a software job, and I'm like, this is not what I want to do. I want to do music. And so I had a bunch of money saved. I'm like, I'm going to go to San Diego, start a band. And I did. Well, I had some high school friends, and that band broke up and started working for other bands up in L.A. and behind the scenes, and did a lot of TV stuff, but it wasn't fulfilling me creatively. So I was like, you know, I just got to make some sort of baby step to start sharing music again. And I was like, I'll start with the drummer. I think that's a good way to start, because I feel like writing songs has a lot to do with like the melody and then the rhythm. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how to play drums. So I turned to Craigslist because all the drummers I knew were busy in other bands, and saw a bunch of different types of drummers on Craigslist. And no one was quite like CeCe here. So we decided to jam, and then we started playing shows, and then we haven't stopped. So,
wow. So you met in the bar, but then like, what was like that first rehearsal like? Like, did you immediately start writing stuff, or was it just kind of like sharing taste, like musical taste? Or,
well, I think we found a common base of, we were both in jazz band in high school, you know, just talking like, what's your musical background? Oh, we were in high school, started playing and jazz band, blues. So I'm like, let's just jam on some blues and have fun. And then ultimately, it was about just having fun and playing music that made us feel good. And blues rock was kind of where we started. And I was in punk bands in high school, so it was kind of like the energy of some of the music from like 2000 era, but then older songs that we grew up on, you know, 60s, 70s music as well.
Yeah. So then how did you start like creating songs? Did you write together, or did you like ever bring in other writers?
I've always been writing songs. And, you know, I started playing guitar like in middle school, and it was fun. Like, I learned the Nirvana songs and all the songs that I liked. But I was like, yeah, guitar. I figured out guitar. That's
yeah.
Cool. But then I really didn't. I learned how to play a few songs. And then I saw a guitar player, my friend's older brother, and he was just shredding. And I'm like, whoa. Not even like shredding, but just playing something really beautiful. And I was like, wow, I should never underestimate what you can do with like six strings and a guitar. And it's kind of been my mantra ever since. And I realized I like songwriting more than playing guitar. And guitar is just kind of like a tool or a means to an end for songwriting. And then when we got together, it was kind of like using her perspective and my perspective and put it into a song and see where it ends up. It's always kind of been a fun process that way.
CeCe, how did you get into drumming? Because, I mean, I feel like as a woman, like... I feel like when I was a kid, I remember that I loved the Carpenters, and I remember that Karen Carpenter played the drums, and I thought that was so cool. But when we were picking out instruments in my high school, I remember I was like, oh, maybe I could play clarinet. How did you get into drumming, and like what inspired you to like go for that?
It was the same sort of situation where we could pick an instrument, you know, and I thought like, okay, drums. Like it called to me. I saw some videos of Karen Carpenter later, which are every woman should see her playing the drums because
yeah.
Like I just had this conversation the other day where someone was asking me like, what's your best drummer of all time? And I never studied like U2 drum. I didn't study like big rock drummers. That was never anything. I didn't listen to that kind of music. But when I saw that first video of Karen Carpenter playing the drums and being so happy, like she was just so happy. And I was like, that's how I feel inside when I play the drums. And I want to give that energy to people. I never saw any female drummers. And when I started the drums in fifth grade, and I was the only girl on the drum line, and that was really difficult. And that's ultimately what made me quit marching band in high school, because I was the only girl. It was just really hard.
Because it's like all the dudes like together, like talk, you just felt left out? Or did you feel like they actually like didn't take you seriously? Or
looking back, being the only girl was such a huge positive benefit for me because I didn't want to lose. Like, I wanted to be the best. And there were some good drummers I was against. And luckily, the boy that was always my competition had started drums at 9 years old. And that was a real blessing for me because it was like the bar was always so high to get to that, like, it made me work really hard. And then when I went into high school, we had marching band camp over the summertime, and you can go and you audition, and it was blind audition. So you're playing and the director is hiding behind a room and he can't see. He just calls your number and you play your part. I worked all summer with a private instructor, and I got snare drum as a freshman, which was like a really big deal because only the whole high school is in one band. All the drummers have to divide up over all the different parts. And so I practiced then all summer, memorized all my parts, got to school freshman year, like ready to go. And the band instructor takes me aside and he's like, listen, I have some seniors here who have never been on snare drum. Their mothers are complaining to me. We're going to have to take you off and we're going to put you on the xylophone, on the bells. And reading that kind of music is completely different than reading drum music. And I refused to learn. Like, I just self-destructed. So I flunked out a band, which should have been my best grade. But I kind of let it get to me and just like, well, if you're going to do that to me, then I'm just going to suck. Like, if you're going to take away what I think I earned, I'm just not going to do well. And that's what happened. And sadly, then I didn't play drums again until we started the band. Like, I just stopped it. But the guy who...
Say it. No.
Who he was, you know, he started drums a year earlier than me, and he went on to be on the Northwestern Marching Band. Like, he did really, really well. Yeah, he's an amazing drummer. He's not in a band now. He worked for a music company, and we've since connected, and he's always felt kind of bad about that. He's like, you're doing what I wish I could have done. And I'm like, well, you did what I wanted to do for years. So I think life just kind of works out how it's supposed to. Like, maybe I wasn't supposed to play all of that time.
Yeah.
And now the difference of being a female drummer now versus being a female drummer when I was a kid is it's an asset. Like, it's a total, it works in my favor. Guys are supportive. I've never felt harassed or, I don't know, I've just, in the 10 years of being in a band versus the 10 years I spent cooking, I've been treated much better this way.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you guys were getting together, like writing or jamming and stuff like that. Do you remember like what your first show was?
Yeah, I kind of pushed her into it. I was like, I booked a show. It's in 2 weeks. And she's like, what? And I was like, we only have 6 songs. It'll be fine. We just play 20, 30 minutes. And she's like, I'm going to puke. I'm like, well, it'll be a good thing. It'll be like, you're the puking drummer. And, it'll be like a thing. I don't know. She worked at a bar at the time and was inviting everyone who came in. And we just told all our friends. It was in North Park, San Diego. And then it was a great show. And I'm sure we didn't play that well, but it was fun and we did it and it encouraged us to keep going and doing more shows.
Yeah. And has the band always been just you two, or have you had different ones where you've had other players on stage too? Or
it's always been just us. I thought we'd add more members and she was like, no, let's just keep it a 2-piece. And I'm like, all right, well, we'll start with that. And then we had my old roommate play bass on a couple shows, but he was very tall and we're not like super tall people. So like it seemed really weird because he was like,
he didn't fit the aesthetic.
Full head and shoulders. Yeah, we're Little Hurricane, not Tall Hurricane, whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, just two is easier.
So after that first show, it sounds like you kind of knew it was something special. Do you remember like the first time it felt like it wasn't friends at shows? Because I remember like when I first lived in New York, I kind of like formed this friend group that was like all my musician friends. And it would always be us like going to each other's shows. But then there would be this point where like it starts to be other people, you know, and it'd be like people you don't know at the shows.
I think it was more when we left San Diego and started playing in other cities. And
okay.
I think our first tour, we went up to Seattle. We booked this tour. Cece booked it.
Okay.
The tour was three shows.
Three okay.
shows, yeah. And we didn't know anything about touring and radius clauses and all that stuff. But some guy, we pulled up into Seattle. I think it was like Queen Anne, no, somewhere downtown. And we see a flyer, a poster with our faces on it, like a black and white copy like of a poster. And I'm like, whoa, we've made it. A poster is up in Seattle. And some guy, like his girlfriend worked at the college and he made tons of these posters for us for free.
Yeah.
And just to like help bring awareness, I'm like, whoa, this is someone we've never met, someone we don't know. And we're not paying. I think we gave him a free ticket or something, but
we've stayed friends with him too over the years. Yeah.
And
that's cool.
I think that was really encouraging. Yeah.
Had you guys put music up on like online or
how did that happen? I mean, this is so long.
I don't think
ago.
We even had music up online yet. Like, I don't know because we were working on the record. We had, but like,
we must have.
So this was 10 years ago, which doesn't sound that long ago, but was really long time ago. So we were like,
10 years sounds like a long time.
Filming videos on an iPod. Remember?
Yeah, I had an iPod and it had video. I'm like, we have a camera. We can do this. <I'm> like,
yeah.
So we uploaded like small YouTube clips and we had like a Facebook. And because we found each other through Craigslist. So those early years, like I would advertise through Craigslist. Mm. Like I would go to the musicians wanted section and then like put our shows to be like, come see our show, you know? And I think that that's how that guy had found us.
Oh, yeah.
But for me, I think the big moment where I'm like, oh, wow, things have shifted. So we had left San Diego, and then when we released the record, we had a song that got picked up by radio. We had played a show in San Diego, and we had come back after being gone for a while. It was X-Fest. It was a big, like, Incubus and Bush played, but we played on the small stage at the beginning. But we started playing, and everyone was singing our song. And we were so confused, like, how...
Like, louder than we could hear it in the monitors, like,
yeah,
singing. And we're just like, this is really weird. It's, like, surreal. But that's just the power of radio. And I don't know. It was shocking. I'm sure now we'd be like, oh, cool, you're singing along. But then we're like, what's going on?
I mean, that's always, like, such an amazing feeling when, like, songs that you remember writing with each other and then, like, now strangers are singing the words back to you. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, it's weird. There's been many moments of encouragement, inspiration throughout the process, I think, of even before we met each other to ending up in San Diego and just living on the same street. And
yeah,
I don't know, sometimes like music is something, if you just listen to it and follow your heart, it'll bring you where you need to be with it. And yeah.
And during this time, like Cece, you said you were booking the shows. How does like the business side of this work into there? Did you have someone helping you with those things?
No, and then it got really crazy for a minute. So, like, we spent a full month, we didn't pay for a meal. All these managers and record labels were like, let me take you to lunch, let me take you to dinner, and all these different things. And we were really thrust into this. There was a lot of buzz at the beginning.
Wait, what was the song that went to radio?
Haunted Heart, it was called.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, it was mainly West Coast, right? Like Portland, San Diego.
Seattle. So. And
but no, we didn't have managers then. And since we've tried out different managers and agents, but when we had our children, we started having babies, it got kind of weird to schedule things. We kind of had to just go with what
our manager at the time, right when we had gotten pregnant, sat us down because he knew we got married, and he was like, listen, I need to talk to you guys, are you planning on having kids? And we were like, maybe. We're someday. not planning on it.
You were pregnant already?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we had a record coming out that was being released by a label overseas, and you know, I knew we were going into this record cycle and I was going into it pregnant, but I planned it that way. Luckily I got pregnant right when
anyone.
I wanted. I didn't tell anyone, but I planned it so that I could tour my entire pregnancy, and by the time I'm ready to pop, it's fall and winter, and we take time off then anyway.
Okay.
But he had told us, if you guys are planning on having kids, I ask that you wait at least 18 months. Ew. I don't know. No.
Yeah. I mean, like, what was the reasoning? Not. Just because he wanted to be sure you had plenty of time to be working.
Yeah. He wanted to push the record cycle. Just work us, you know, tour us.
Travel,
tour. And we had done that for years. And it was like no longer made sense where that was more valuable than trying to build a family.
Yeah.
And so we took this leap, and after the leap, so then we lost our agent, and then we fired the manager. It's hard to get a team now because we have two kids. The really
and
great
COVID
thing
too.
is, and COVID, but
yeah, right.
we're grown ass adults. Like, I don't need someone managing us. I don't. At this point in our careers.
Until it's too much to manage. Yeah,
and
right
now.
The
hard part for me about band managers, because coming from like the restaurant world or the barment world, like if you're a kitchen manager, you've cooked for a long time. If you're a bar manager, you've bartended for a long time. But if you're a band manager, you just like music. And you're hoping to help someone. And ideally, you can put all these connections together. But there's nothing, you don't have the actual experience of, hey, my in-ear monitor just went out. What are we going to do? The show starts in 20 minutes. Like, well, we had a manager. I said, listen, it just went out. What are we going to do? And he, like, literally tapped his shut, like, his pockets, like, well, I don't have an in-ear monitor. And it's like, if you knew what
we're going
through.
Well, if he was more of a stage manager, he would have
then
one,
you would know how to fix it. So now where we're at, like, coronavirus, I'm running as our agent, and we're managing ourselves. And now what we're doing is completely rewriting our business plan to exclude any ticketed headline events
until things are like back to normal. Yeah, we did like a socially distanced thing, private like fundraiser for Art Gallery, and it was cool to be on stage again, but it wasn't like a good feel. Like, it didn't feel like a real concert kind of thing. And so we're not going to push that angle, because that's always kind of been our go-to, is like live concerts. You know, we can always just pick a city, Minneapolis or something. We can go there and do that, but now we can't. So it's like, because we can just write songs and record.
Kind of shifts the way you like plan out how you're going to share your music and connect with fans. And I get what you're saying with like the managers, and like now you guys have been a band for 10 years. And so you know like what things you actually need, where like someone new, there's going to be like a little bit of a learning curve, and like really figuring out where does a manager add value, because managers can play lots of different roles for different artists. You know, like some managers I know like also produce the artists they work with. So you can really, like, the thing about the music business I'm learning from doing this podcast is like you can run the business how you want to,
especially to spend time with our kids. It's like, if it was up to a manager or an agent, we'd be on the road all the time and revisiting markets, which makes sense, you know, financially. But when it comes to spending time with our kids at this age where like a day goes by and like, whoa, they look different, they grew, the experience of that is more valuable to us right now. And luckily, we're in a position that we've been a band for a while where we do get royalties. We can do little Zoom concerts and things to make things work. The time to grow these kids is like really important to us. So
have your kids like shown any interest in, I'm sure they have, in like music and stuff yet? They're so small, but.
Yeah, the 3-year-old Rocco, he's our son. He'll come in the studio with us and have headphones on over here while the younger one's napping sometimes. We have her on a monitor. I'll give him an iPad, you know, and let him watch something while we're here. But he'll pick up a tambourine and start playing along with us.
He'll be tapping his leg.
Yeah, he like doesn't want to watch. He doesn't want to play with the iPad or whatever. He just wants to watch us and jam along, which is really cool, I think. We're not pressuring him into anything, although she did buy him a drum set.
His second birthday. I mean, waited till he was 2, but.
And I've been like getting him to lift small cases. I'm like, all right, lift this one now.
He's like, you have someone on the road with you later.
Right. Yeah.
So quarantine, I think now, like you were saying, the option is kind of connecting with fans like over the internet. And what's your relationship with like Instagram and social media, and like how do you guys deal with that?
We do not love social media, unfortunately. Yeah. I wish we did. I wish that it felt better to do, to engage with fans that way. I think that overdoing social media for me takes away more than it adds to my life, because then I'm always thinking like, oh, let me get a picture of it. And I still am always sort of thinking that, but I don't think that we're excellent at social media.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Well, I don't do it.
He doesn't do
you
it
You just
at
don't
all.
Do it.
I should.
Yeah.
I mean, I've tried it. I'm like, wait a second. I'm just trying to find something to take a picture of. It's not like, doesn't feel natural to me, but I'm more of an introvert anyways, I guess, where I just like to write songs and that's my way of expressing myself, and I'll put albums out or songs out. And I think we try to communicate with our fans that way, but I don't know if it's our focus or a priority. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and it's interesting to look like, it's hard not to compare, right? So I can look at like a video we've made that might have a couple 100,000 views. And then I see a video of someone falling down the stairs that has like 100 million views.
I know.
And
that's
it's
what
like,
we're doing wrong.
You know?
I mean, you guys should have had like people performing like stunts and falling downstairs in your video.
Our son likes trains, you know, it's like a 3-year-old thing. And on YouTube, you can find like hours of people just like filming trains drive by, millions and millions of views. I'm like, We should just make a music video of trains driving by. Like, people love that.
Yeah.
And it's hard to, like, even get into that game, that mindset, because I feel like it takes away from what we're trying to do in the first place is write music. And
of course. It kind of, like, messes with your mind of, like, oh, well, what's valuable here? Like you said, a video of someone falling down the stairs or this song. And clearly, like, a song is so valuable and so special and doesn't always, like, show that on the analytics, I guess.
Luckily, we do it for us first and foremost. So if nobody watches it, it's like, oh, well, we did it. We like it. But it's also reassuring when people do like it and share
it.
Yeah,
of course.
I think that's kept us going over the years, or fans or people who come to shows and be like, tell us how much it means to them. And it's kind of weird to hear that from someone.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it keeps us going. Or at the merch table, people leave like notes or letters and they'll be like, wow, this song really helped me in a time that was hard in my life. And that kind of feedback is like, we're onto something. Let's not quit just yet. So.
Yeah. And I think honestly, our demographic that loves our music isn't that into social media. Like, our demographic's a little bit older. And like, when you're telling those stories, it just reminded me of Rick, which is going to make me cry. But we had this fan, Rick.
I was thinking of that photographer girl.
Oh, well, we had this fan, Rick, and his wife, Lita, who they were grandparents, right? Younger grandparents, but they're a little older. And they would travel and come to shows with us. They would travel all over the country to come see us play. And he recently passed away. And his wife called us. And he was, like, on his deathbed. And she's like, Rick, he can't talk, but he wants to hear you guys. Like, and we got to tell him goodbye. And, like, oh, God, it's going to make me cry. But just the thought that, like, we met someone through music. And we got to say goodbye to, like, they were thinking of us as he was dying. And then at his funeral, they had, like, our big signed poster and signed albums. And, like, that to me is so much more impactful than, like, getting 1,000 likes on a picture, which I don't know if we'll ever, you know, I don't know. It's just not our, sorry.
Okay.
I'm emotional.
No, it's great. You're, like, making me cry, too. No, I feel like, yeah, that's so much more valuable than, like, 1,000 likes on a picture. Making a true, like, connection with someone that's, you've provided this sort of, like, music soundtrack for their life, you know, that they, like...
Yeah, and then they'd play the music at the funeral. Like, it's just, like, too much. it's sweet, though.
I, like, relate to that because there's certain bands... Like, I've jokingly said, like, oh, like, I don't want to talk to anyone when I die. Like, just let me listen to... I love this band, Frightened Rabbit. And I was like, I just want to listen. That is so special, and you're so right. And I feel like that kind of thing sustains you. Like, in a music career, an acting career, there's so many ups and downs, and you're never going to feel like... it's enough, you know? It's always like chasing another carrot. But like, when you find value in just like, well, this song makes me happy and it makes my friend happy, and making like real personal connections is like, is the most important.
Well, on that topic of like distracting, like there's a lot of distractions. And I learned this like when I was getting into recording our own music. I started with like a 4-track in high school, a tape player in my room. And I mean, it's an endless pit of technology and microphones and things. I'm sure you know, if you record at home, it's like, oh, maybe I need this new thing and that'll fix it. But you can constantly do that and then you're not making music because you're just like upgrading things or trying to get your studio sounding better. And it's like, I think for me, that was a challenge to be like, all right, it's good. I can make music. I don't need to keep buying microphones or things, and not to stop like searching and learning to make things better, but not to let it get in the way of like creating and actually like making stuff. Which social media could be aligned with that, where it's like, oh, you can focus all your energy on social media and then, oh, wait, you forgot to make any music or
videos. Then there's just always somebody better and bigger. And I had seen one time a few years ago, Lady Gaga was like on a late night show and she was talking about how her next tour was going to be in outer space. And I was like, whoa, I never want to be as big as Lady Gaga, where I'm like, what do I got to do to take it to the next level? I got to go to outer space. Like, that would be a horrible feeling that you just got to keep topping yourself.
I think the meat dress was like the top and then she's at the bottom.
Yeah, first and foremost, making music for yourself. I get what you're saying with like the distraction too. Me and my friend Ben, he produces a lot of my music, and he used to say like, let's like not go, like in here I have some stuff to record and everything, and you're much more advanced than I am. I'm like, I don't know. I'm just like, but be like, oh, let's go sit in the living room and just make sure, like, focus on like the first part of just like the words and the song, and like make sure we have like a solid song before trying to like add all the other elements. Okay, in quarantine, are you being creative? Like, are you writing songs now, or is it too hard with like the stress of the world and like, or how has it been?
It, Our path this year has, well, it started last year, actually, when you have kids, you listen to, like, kid songs, nursery rhymes, and you sing in these songs, you know, like, Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, Wheels, and all these songs that you knew, like, from a kid, and I'm like, these songs are so annoying. Like, after hearing them so many times, and I'm like, we should just come up with some different versions of these songs, you know, traditional nursery rhymes. And so I just started goofing around with our son, like, on acoustic guitar in the living room, and before you know it, we have, like, 14 different nursery rhymes with our own version of it. And
oh, that's so cool.
This was, like, our project, and then when COVID hit, we're like, well, I guess we'll actually do this now. I don't know. It was just, like, a funny idea at first. Like, we'll do a bunch of nursery rhymes in our style. Then the more I started looking into them, like, wow, some of these songs are, like, 300 years old. They need an update, and, like, at least for us, to not to have to sing the same melody over and over to them. And
yeah,
I figured if there's a need for us to want better children's music, then someone else might want it too. So we're going to record that and share it with everyone. I don't know when, but
we're going to try to finish by the end of the year.
End of the year, sure. Okay.
To record it.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I'm excited because we've been in this genre of, like, alternative rock, blues rock for 10 years. And I love business. I think of myself as an entrepreneur, and I want to be creative, but it's hard when you keep going back to the same publications and you keep going back to the same, just the same radio stations, the same everything, and you're the same band. So they think, well, we heard you 10 years ago, you know. But the idea of...
We're not the same band.
We're not the same band. But the idea of being able to have a whole new demographic of listeners, meaning little kids, is, like, so cool, I think. It's so exciting that, like, we could play for somebody new. I don't know.
Well, also the parents, too, because I feel like the parents have to listen to children's music as much as the kids do, or even more so. And then it's got to be something that's making your life better, your day better. So that's our goal with this album.
You can test it out on Rocco, too, and see.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
no,
you have, like, a
it.
Test audience, you know?
Well, when he started singing the songs and the melodies that we were coming up with, and I was like, all right, we've made it. Now he's switched over to singing the way we designed it or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, he likes both traditional nursery rhymes and the new ones, but the new ones are a little more fun. And then it also inspired me to, like, write some original songs for kids. And so we'll have, like, a couple original songs in there too.
Oh, that's so cool. What are you guys playing today?
We'd like to perform our version of Baba Black Sheep.
Really?
Which is, yeah.
That's so cool.
So this is, like, the first one that I started, like, playing with or changing the song around. And it's the one we feel most comfortable, like, to perform live or whatever.
Yeah.
Bye bye black sheep, have you any wool? Yes sir, three bad four. One for my master, one for my dame, and for the little boy who lives down the lane. Bye bye black sheep, have you any wool? Yes sir, three bags full. Bye bye black sheep, have you any wool? Yes sir, three bags. One for my master, needed a sweater, keep him warm in inclement weather. One for the dame, she needed new socks, yeah. Now she's got a more comfortable walk. Last one goes to the boy down the lane. Needed a scarf, yeah. His was stained. Oh, bye bye black sheep, have you any wool? Yes sir, three bags full. One for the master, one for the dame, for the little boy who lives down the lane. No sir, no bags full. Black sheep, have you any wool? Yes sir, three bags. Gave them away.
one by one. Bye-bye, black sheep, have you any wool? No, sir, no, sir, no bags full.
That was so awesome. I just told Rob they're the coolest parents ever. I wish they were my parents.
I don't think any kid thinks their parents are cool, but maybe we can at least like let them have fun with some songs. And stuff. Yeah. He'll be playing with us at some point.
Would you guys want to play another song or how do you?
Sure. We could play one off our new album.
Yeah.
Blood Boil?
Sure. Let's do that. We'll do one off our... not children's album.
Okay.
Makes my blood boil, rooted hot soil. My blood out dirt and oil, right freed right now. Makes my blood boil, rooted hot soil. My blood out dirt and oil, right freed right now. This puppy goes real fast. Got this picture on my dash, I feel at home. Run it close to the red line. Save caution for the next life, now I'm alone, no. Makes my blood boil, rooted heart. Blood of dirt and oil, right free, it's right now. Makes my blood boil, roots in hard soil. I blood of dirt and oil, right free, it's right now. Makes my heart beat real fast. Clot of dust in my path, but now I'm gone. No. Clear in all directions, yeah. Not here for no honorable mention, no. Makes my blood boil, roots in hot soil. My blood out dirt and oil, right free to right now. Makes my blood boil, roots in hot.
Awesome.
Thank you.
I wish we had more nursery rhymes to play right now, but they're not quite finished. Three Blind Mice is a good one. Mary Had a Little Lamb. Oh, man. It's gonna be good.
And I'm excited for, like, the shows, too. I mean, you guys have to, like, I mean, when COVID's over, obviously, like, tour with, like, in the kids' shows or something. Like,
yeah,
what's
got some ideas.
Yeah. I want, like, whole vaudeville with, like, tap dancers and... hype men and
I don't know if we agree on the tap dancers, but we're gonna
I bet you would like to see a tap dancer on stage.
I would, right? See a tap dancer, yes.
Well, really nice to meet you. Thanks for having us on your podcast. And
yeah, we did watch many seasons of Walking Dead, so this is pretty cool for us.
All right, well, have a great day, I guess. And
yeah, thanks
again. See ya. Okay, so besides Baba Black Sheep being my favorite thing about this episode, the other favorite thing was when Cece talked about the fan who wanted to listen to their music at the end of his life. You can tell how important and special it is for this band to stay connected to the longtime supporters and fans of their music. And, you know, while it's easy to get caught up in the business of making art, truly the best part of making music is sharing it with others. I know that I love when I write a song, it has the ability to connect with someone in a really deep, personal way, even if I've never met them in real life. You know, I became even more of a fan of Little Hurricane after this conversation, and I hope you did too. I linked the coffee Tone talked about at the beginning and also Little Hurricane's music in the show notes. And if you liked this week's episode, be sure to subscribe and rate and comment. I also linked the official Spotify playlist and a Facebook group page if you love coffee and music as much as me and you want to just keep the conversation going. We are just a few weeks into this year and it has already been so heavy for so many people. But I hope that you're able to take some time this week and enjoy a really good cup of coffee or a really good song by your favorite band. And I will be back next week with another great artist and another episode of My Caffeine Withdrawal.